Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare. All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up.
We are clinking our chalices.
Right. Ceramic chalices. Because we are in England.
Yeah. In long before the Vikings and all of that stuff. With King Lear.
King Lear!
King Lear.
King Lear. And we're drinking mead.
Yes.
I'm drinking Bunratty mead. It's drink of Irish medieval banquets is what it says on the bottle.
Ooh. And I'm drinking Chaucer's mead.
Chaucer's
made
mead.
Made from 100% pure honey, whatever that means to you.
But also I think it's interesting that the Bunratty is M-E-A-D-E and yes. The Chaucer's is M-E-A-D.
And we decided on mead because...
because it felt appropriate to King Lear. I mean, what the hell were they drinking in Lear's time?
In medieval England.
It's drunk Shakespeare.
Yay, drunk Shakespeare. Kick off King Lear. Woo-hoo! Yay! And we're also sitting in a very different space. We're in my weird little room at my mom's house. So you might hear dogs.
Or cats.
Cats have been shut out. Right out.
Right out. You might hear things. But that's okay. You've heard
rude
things
neighbors.
Before.
Rude neighbors.
And Diana's
such.
Pouring more mead. Yay.
Yay. Oh, I have to try the other one too.
You did try it.
And we're going after this to play Scrabble. How's that going to work?
It's going to work. It will be fine. Because, you know, we'll play cat and it and bad.
And they'll be like, why do you guys suck at this today?
I always suck at Scrabble. So it doesn't matter to me. All right. So we're going to start by telling you a little bit about King Leo.
And why Shakespeare wrote it and what he was... maybe saying about, I don't know, we don't know, but we're just surmising.
Well, and here's the thing. As always, as we go through it, we will discover new things about what we think Mr. Shakespeare was maybe trying to say through this play. I mean, Diana and I have had the opportunity to do this play together.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most best, fun, fabulous experiences of my whole acting career. It was fabulous, but I have to admit, I've never read the full script. I've only read Diana's cut. So there are things.
I thought we'd maybe do my cut because, sadness, there is a website that I always got my full scripts from, which was the MIT educational website. It's gone! It's terrible.
What happened?
They took it down. It doesn't exist anymore. So I can't get full scripts. You can get them as PDFs, but that means I can't put notes on them and I can't do stuff to them. So I was really bummed I had to take my cut and add in all these lines. Oi. Anyway.
Here we go. So here are the things we think you might want to know.
So when you're getting ready to dive in, I'm sure your teacher or whoever is prepping you for this will give you some notes, but it's one of Shakespeare's later plays.
Right.
And it's considered one of his five, like, woo, uber tragedies, you know, boom, 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 Hamlet, Macbeth, Othello, Lear, Romeo and Juliet. But it was first performed in between 1604 and 1605. There were references to it. And who's on the throne then?
King James!
King James!
He's a fan of witches.
Yes, witches. There aren't any witches in this place.
I know.
No.
But what did you discover about who is?
I discovered something that I never knew all of the times that I've directed this play. I've directed it three times. And King James was also the Duke of Albany.
Which is so interesting because, as you'll see when we get started, Albany appears in this play. of course, it's not King James, but he is the Duke of Albany. So right. You have to be careful, because right before we turned on the mic, Diana and I were talking about power dynamics and who's trying to seize power. And I said something about, or Diana said something about the Duke of Cornwall. And I said, and the Duke of Albany. Don't forget the Duke of Albany. And then she told me this, that Albany
was King James.
Was King James.
That was one of his titles.
So he couldn't be a bad guy the way the Duke of Cornwall. Yeah.
So he got to be one of the guys who survives the whole mess. And he also makes him look sort of like a good guy by the end, you know? But it's like,
here's the thing. Well, it depends
on
who...
to the shittiest shitty.
No, see, I'm going to disagree again. Where? So here's the thing. I'm going to argue for the sisters throughout this play. So y'all just better get used to it. And I probably am biased because I played Goneril, and because of that, I feel close to her. But I think that... Well, we'll talk about it as we go. But I don't believe that Albany treats Goneril very well either.
No.
And I think, well, we'll talk about agency. I feel like the theme of this play, for me, right now, before we read it, is agency. Who has agency? Why do they have agency? When do they lose their agency? Mm. Right? And how does that go? And what does it do to people's psyche, you know?
And then what does it do to the community as a whole?
Right.
For each person.
Well, because they are reflective, right? Anytime.
Aspects of the community.
Right. Yeah. Anytime. You can tell I've been drinking. Anytime you have royalty, right? They represent, by default, the royal family represents the country.
As a whole.
Right, yeah. They are the country.
Right, so, especially the king is the country.
Right, but the royal family is as well, to a degree, right? You have to behave certain ways because you are the country.
Yeah.
So you really are the country in a microcosm in some ways.
Yeah.
So I mean, I've only had how many inches? 4 inches? Is that four?
Of meat? Yeah, but that's a lot.
Four inches. Sweet. And also, it's, okay, it's sweet, and I haven't eaten a lot today. I had a busy day, so I'm... Yeah.
I was like, Aaron, are we going to drink, if we drink mead really fast, we're going to get super trashed. And she was like, we'll sip it. And I was like, no, we won't.
Also, I have to leave at 10:30 tomorrow morning to drive to Washington, D.C. for this baptism. So I can't be hungover.
Yeah.
I can't.
So we're sipping instead of shotting.
Well, yeah, no shotting, not shooting.
No.
But sipping goes fast when you're drinking something this sweet. Yeah. Okay, anyway, I side.
So, royal family.
Yes.
So this might be a story about kings and daughters and such, but it's mostly a family story.
Two families, both alike in dignity.
Not really, but you know, Gloucester and his sons, and then we have Lear and his daughters. And how do those two stories complement each other? We're definitely going to look at.
They are, in
mirrors.
Some ways,
mirrors,
like an antithesis in some ways.
Yeah, beautiful.
I don't know. Like boys, like girls, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
In 1604, the question of succession, which Lear brings up right in the beginning, would have been a huge thing because Elizabeth I, as we've said many times, but if you're just checking in for Lear, we're going to repeat some things. Elizabeth I almost died without an heir. She basically named King James on her deathbed. So that was a huge anxiety for the country as a whole.
We need a king or a queen! Preferably a king because girls...
Yes, girls suck, yeah. and so a contemporary audience, the minute Lear says, I'm dividing up my kingdom, they would have been like, no, don't do it! It leads to civil war. It's dangerous, right? And this story... Although Shakespeare really changed so many things from all of the... He's supposed to have all these different sources that he might have taken bits of the story from. Holinshed, Sir Philip Sidney, blah, blah, blah. But he really made it his own and changed all of the story aspects.
Yeah. I mean, you can read about the story of... It's not spelled L-E-A-R,
it's L-I-E-R.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, that's like druidic... Boop, 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 boop.
Yeah. But I like the name of the eldest daughter. It's Gonorilla. Gonorrhea. Yikes. Very very bad.
Oh, dear, very bad. Drink water.
Okay, so Erin, tell us what Harold Bloom says about King Lear.
Harold Bloom says that Lear should not be performed. Hmm. He says it should be read because it's a beautiful play, but it should not be performed. And the reason it should not be performed is because the character of Edgar is unplayable. And the reason the character of Edgar is unplayable is because it's so beautifully, poetically written that there's no action impetus. There's no good way for an actor to play Edgar. Now, Diana and I were talking about this, and I disagree, because Harold Bloom is not an actor, nor is he a director. He's a scholar. And so if you've seen a good production of Lear, which he claims there are none, if you've seen a good production of Lear where the actor finds reasons for Edgar to be how he is and really sink into, I know there's no subtext in Shakespeare, but the thing is, there kind of is with Edgar, and certainly with Edmund. So you as an actor may feel like it's a difficult role to play, to make him a mover and a shaker, to make him have things happen for him. But I think you can find it. It just, you have to figure it out. It's a puzzle.
Well, actually, when you were saying that before about him not him being the one, I was thinking Harold Bloom thought Lear is unplayable, which I have my own theories about, too. But Edgar being unplayable, I think it's interesting because I think that Edgar, and we have lots of these throughout Shakespeare, is our onstage audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he dips into these places where he's playing a character for the sake of the action on stage, but that's not his real impetus or his action within the play. So this whole madness thing that he dips into, he comes right out of it and speaks directly to us. And he's like, oh my God, look at the king. What's happening with him? And then he bounces right back into it. So it's almost like an actor coming out of a character, speaking to the audience as if he's giving us notes or something, and then back into the character.
Yeah.
So for us to say he doesn't really have action, I think his action is that.
Yeah. To be us.
To be us and to give us clues and help us relate.
Interesting.
To places that are difficult in the play.
I like that. Fuck you, Harold Bloom. No, I mean, don't. I mean, Harold, I love you. I love Marjorie Garber. I do. But in this case, I'm drinking mead and I'm going to say,
That's okay.
I'm going to say it's okay to say fuck you on this.
Let's drink to that.
Drink to that.
Woo. Yeah. So kings, we were saying, are equal to the country, right?
Yeah.
So actually, when they bury kings, they put them in these big sarcophagi kind of things, and they have an effigy, a stone statue of them on top of that thing.
Sure, we've seen those in the cloisters.
So many places, in Westminster and everywhere, right? So that actually represents the fact that the king has two bodies. He has a mortal body, which is his bones and his ashes now that are underneath that thing, and he has an eternal body, right? Mm-hmm. An anointed body that was chosen by God and therefore cannot
or
die.
Or the gods,
and therefore cannot die. But I think that Lear is a little confused about this. He doesn't separate those two things as different, and he thinks it's all him. But then in the very first scene, he gives away his immortal part, right? He gives away his royalty and all the trappings that make him royalty. And so then he becomes
not
just a man.
Right.
And so that's when he sets himself up for suffering. Major suffering, because he spent 80 years before that being a king. So it's almost like retribution for, you didn't have to suffer all your life. Guess what? Now you get it all.
Right.
In a way.
I mean, I think that, see, this is one of the things I have about Goneril and Regan in my head is that, if you're reared and raised to represent royalty, which is that royal people cannot be humans.
No.
They can't be.
And even look at Succession.
I love that
You
song.
Raise people at a certain level in society, they fucking can't relate.
They don't know
they don't
anything.
Understand. Yeah,
they don't know anything
like
different.
Regular humans. Like, it's crazy.
That's like when Donald Trump said, about grocery shopping, remember?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's just like, if you raise someone to not shop for groceries for themselves, they don't know how shopping works.
Yeah.
They don't know. And it's not their fault. Right?
Yeah, so it's not level, but it's like, come on, well, be a responsible human. Like, for God's sake.
But if you have never, these people in this play, they don't, Lear thinks he is all that whether he's king or not.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's been told. The sun shines out his asshole.
Right. So
right?
He doesn't think it means having land and stuff.
But or a crown.
It absolutely does.
It totally does.
Right?
Right.
As soon as you give away all that power, well, then fuck you. And I don't need to listen to you anymore.
Right. And here's the thing, right? So, like, if we look at the Windsors now, for example, Andrew did some things that got him kicked out of royal duties and got his titles amended. But the family still stands behind him in that he hasn't been stripped of being called Prince Andrew, right? He's...
Right.
In this situation in Lear, where they're like, well, you gave away your stuff, so now we don't got to do nothing for you.
Yeah.
If they did that to Andrew, he would have to face what it means not to be a royal. He hasn't had to face that yet.
Right. But I think also that Goneril and Regan and Cornwall, they don't actually equate it in terms of themselves. Like, if you undermine the title and the whole office, you're also undermining yourself taking it over.
But they don't get that
right?
yet.
They don't get it. They don't understand.
Right. They don't they don't get that because
because what do you leave to be king of then if you're ruining the royalty, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And they, so I think that's they've also the been raised,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
They've also been raised to believe that the royal family is the royal family. There's
right,
like, it doesn't matter what you have or have not.
Yeah.
You're
and
still the royal family.
Nobody argues with us. If we want to put somebody's eyeballs out, we can do it.
Wait, spoiler.
Spoiler.
Okay, let's go.
And so then we were also talking about what is happening with Lear in the beginning of the play. So he's 80 some odd,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And
which was very rare.
Really rare. Really rare. So the fact that he keeps repeating, I'm 80, blah, 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 throughout the play, he will do that. The Duchess of York in Richard III continues to repeat, I'm 80 years old. It was very, very rare. And I think that they didn't know about certain ailments and stuff that happened to people that old because they didn't have examples of it. It just didn't happen.
Or, yes, right, exactly. But also, even if they did have examples of it,
they just locked them up.
They locked, like, they said, you know, they're possessed.
Yeah.
They're possessed by demons.
Right.
Right?
Put them in the madhouse.
They didn't have doctors who were like, oh, there's something going on with your brain.
Yes.
You know, they were like, bleed them.
Yeah.
Then lock them up. Because they're possessed by demons.
Right. So when we played this play, we had this theories about Lear experiencing dementia. Right?
Yeah. So Andrew, who played Lear, said, I think he had Lewy body dementia, which is a very specific kind of dementia. It manifests in physical symptoms of maybe shaking. It might be misdiagnosed as Parkinson's. But
there's also like mood swings, right?
Big mood swings and irrational fears and thoughts and paranoia. And, you know, a lot of different things.
No restraint, you know, like just I want to do it. And
yeah,
so,
no,
like,
right.
I have to do
impulse
it.
Control.
Yeah,
right.
No impulse control.
Yeah, so Andrew was like, I'm going to play him like he has Lewy body dementia.
Yeah.
And he was fucking fabulous.
Yeah, because that really helped him to really access what is happening with him.
Yeah, because it isn't that Lear is an evil. Well, again, you know, I think nobody's evil in Shakespeare.
No,
but
to arrive at that age and then be dealing with things that nobody seems to be able to get a handle on and tell you about.
And it must be terrifying, and also terrifying to you, but also terrifying to the people around you who all of a sudden see you behaving in a very different way than they're used to you behaving.
So they're, you know, trying to explain, and you'll see the sisters trying to explain his irrationality and, like, what do we have to do about this? We better get out ahead of it because he might be, you know, exploding at us any minute too.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So it makes everybody around you very, very uncomfortable. Then there's a scene, we're going to do the first scene today, but there's a really key important character who is not there. And most of the main characters are there in that first scene, except for
the fool.
The fool. And the fool is a wonderful, amazing character, but he's unlike any other fool that we see in other plays, Touchstone and, you know,
Festy
and various fools that we see. He's more dark, you know, he's definitely mature and in a different way. He really exploits and understands his allowance to speak truth to power.
Right.
Yeah.
But he isn't there to make the groundlings laugh.
No.
He's not. That's not his role.
He does a little. He tells some jokes and stuff, but they're jokes at people's expense.
Right. And he says...
At Lear's expense.
Right.
Especially.
Yeah. But, you know, if you think about the other fools, like I'm thinking about Winter's Tale.
Yeah.
You know, those characters are there to make the groundlings giggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
This fool is there solely to speak truth to power.
To Lear. Yeah. And to try to get him to see the results of his actions. And
he's Lear's conscience.
Lear's shadow.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Which somebody said was Lear's mortal body. You know, so it's almost like I'm taking on the characteristics of your mortal self so that you can
be king.
Be king. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, I love that.
I'm the one who's silly and farts and does the, you know, and gets beaten and stuff so that you can be king. And then the fool and Lear are the only ones left together in a way. So the fool becomes the mortal person.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. The fool is a beautiful role.
Yeah. And we were saying, why is he not there? You know, because this first scene would have been entirely different. We would have no play.
He wouldn't have allowed this to happen.
He would not have allowed what happens to happen. Kent is this incredibly loyal servant, and he stops just short of major offense. He tries to come to the defense of Cordelia, and he tries to reason with Lear, and he sees that he isn't getting anywhere.
Well, he also gets...
He gets banished.
He gets banished.
Banished. But I think the fool would have been like, banished, fuck you. You know, like, just kept talking.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. You can banish me all you want, but the truth is X, you know.
And the fool is another one of those characters like Mercutio who disappears in the middle of the play. Yeah. And I think it's just because his role is finished. Lear says of him later, my poor fool is hanged. What does that mean? You're like, what happened to him? Where did he go?
Right. And so we have to decide that for ourselves.
Yeah. We only have that one line to tell us. So that's really interesting. Let's, as we go through, we can watch and see if there are more clues.
But also, if the fool is indeed Lear's body, mortal body, when Lear becomes more himself, after the storm,
he's incorporated.
Yeah, there's no, the fool can't exist.
It. Yeah, he doesn't need it.
Right. Interesting.
Because he is fully integrated by the end of the play, even though he's much more feeble and, you know, he's not the huge dominating power that he was.
No, he's an old man.
And he says, pardon me for being old, but it's like, dude, everybody gets old.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. All right, so themes.
Yeah, we've been talking about so aging, you know, and what that means, right? Nihilism, like not caring about anything. That's Edmund is really that. Edmund the Bastard, you know, he's like, yeah, fuck it. I'll just ride whatever wave comes my way and I don't need to worry about consequences and stuff, you know? So we have this word nothing that really stands out, especially in the first scene, but we hear it again and again.
Yeah, yeah.
So watch out for that. Madness, yeah, we talked about it. Nature of power, authority, and chaos.
And right? I also want to add into nature of power, agency,
so
right?
Aaron said that
the ability to make things happen for yourself and for others.
Watch out, and this has come around in lots of other plays, is the theme of eyesight and seeing, and like seeing what is right in fucking front of you and not wanting to deal with it or not understanding it, you know?
Or ignoring it.
Or trusting it. Eyesight and characters will have to deal with eyesight being taken away from them in various ways.
Shh,
spoilers.
Family dynamics.
Yeah. Parents and children, brothers, sisters, you know, what that all... it really explores a lot of that.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
Loyalty. Loyalty, how you can be loyal to a fault.
Or how that could be your own, you know, Kent, that is his thing. That is his big log that he's carrying through the whole play.
Yeah.
Right? And he's a beautiful character, but he's also ineffectual.
You know? Totally, because he can't be anything but loyal.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just put this section in here. I brought up some famous Lears, some people who've played them, because there's some people who are around now. Mm-hmm. So we mentioned Succession. Brian Cox played Lear, but he played him way back in 1990 when he was only 44.
Yeah, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But I can see Brian Cox being a fucking fantastic Lear. I mean, just watch him as Logan, right?
Yeah.
Logan Roy, he's...
Oh, yeah.
He is King Lear.
So he's almost playing Lear now.
He is playing Lear now.
He is, yeah. And like 44 is too young. So that's what I was thinking Harold Bloom was objecting to, is like, to understand the character, I think you have to be much older.
I agree.
But then the problem is... Then you're older and you're dealing with memory problems. Like, can you memorize all those lines?
But of course you can.
Right.
Right, of course you can.
Some yes and some no. Some people who would make fabulous Lears but couldn't possibly memorize that part because it's just giant.
It's massive.
Just fucking giant.
It is massive.
Right?
Yeah.
And then also there's a scene at the end where you come in, Lear comes in bearing the body of his dead, spoiler, child.
And it's a tragedy.
Yeah, that takes, you know, physical strength. So for an 80-year-old man, like, whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah, but yeah. I think there are 80-year-old men now who could do it.
Yeah. And there's 80-year-old men and there's 80-year-old men. Like, you know.
Yeah. Right.
So F. Murray Abraham, who was just in White Lotus, you know, he played him at age 57. So we're getting a little closer there. Ian Holm, who played Bilbo. In the movies, in the Hobbit movies, he played him at age 66. So, okay, you know, and he's a famous Shakespearean actor.
Yeah.
Played a lot of Shakespeare. Olivier played him in 46 at only the age of 39. And I bet you that was because he's like, wow, the fucking World War is going to take out and I might not get a chance.
Right, I better do it now.
I better do it now, you know? Like, yeah, there was that sort of sense of in the world of, do it now or lose your opportunity. So, kind of interesting.
But then he played him again.
And then he played him again at age 76, finally, in 1983, just a few years before he died. So I bet those were very, very different years.
Fucking, yeah.
Very, very different. And there was a quote from the Book of Solomon that I brought in when I was directing this, because Lear brings it up. He says it. So I thought it was apt. And it is... For there is no king that had any other beginning at birth. All men have one entrance into life and alike going out. So just to remember that no matter how high you climb, you're a human and you came from a little egg and you will go into the ground and there's nothing you can do to change those two endings, right? Those two brackets.
Yeah, but even in the middle of those brackets, all humans take shits.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And all humans get sick at some point. So you do need to deal with your humanity at some point. All right. Shall we get to it?
Let's do it.
Bring some of those things in later.
Oh,
I was going to give a shout out actually to this really cool book. Did you read it?
I listened to it.
This really cool book called Lear Wife. Because, as we often say, there's no fucking moms in Shakespeare plays, just like Disney. And so this book imagines where Mrs. Lear was.
And how Mrs. Lear is.
Yeah.
To have been married to that man.
Yeah. And they have her as still alive through all of this action.
Yep. Living in a convent.
Living in a convent. And banished because Lear thinks she had an affair with Kent. And that perhaps Cordelia is the result of that affair.
Because there's a big difference in age between Cordelia and the other two.
Older sisters.
So. Yeah.
So... interesting things to just like, oh, toss around and think about. Could be cool.
Yeah.
So briefly, this is the story of, here's the story of a lovely lady. Oh, no. Sorry.
Of a raging king. Who was bringing up three very lovely girls.
See, it works. And he decides, since he has no male heir and no obvious heir for his land, that he's going to divide up his land. But he asks his daughters to tell him how much they love him And that will determine which piece of the country they can have.
But let's say, I believe this, he already knows what he intends to give to each one of them.
Absolutely does.
So his favorite is Cordelia. She is the apple of his eye, and he is ready to give her the best parcel.
Yeah. He says, what can you do to draw a piece more opulent than your sister? So he already had that carved out.
Yep.
He already knew.
Yep. He just needed for them to be performative in front of the court and kiss his ass.
Yep. And it was definitely the piece that contained London and stuff. It was down below because Burgundy, it very much seems that Burgundy is the very top of France, which is just across the English Channel from that bit. So it very much seems that Burgundy's like, yeah, and I'll have both sides of the English Channel, right? And I'll be set up. It'll be great.
Right. It's not like, right. Lear is not making this up on the fly.
No.
This is planned, right? He wants to humble them in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And he already knows what he intends to give them. This is all performance.
Yeah.
It's not, and I've seen it played where people play it like, I think I'll do this, but it's not that at all.
It's not that. It's not that, because Gloucester already says in the beginning, he's like, oh, yeah, you know, it's really hard to tell who he likes better, Albany or Cornwall, but he doesn't even talk about Cordelia's piece in this very first scene.
Right.
So we're starting, actually, with not Lear, right?
Right.
We're starting with the other family in this whole story. We're starting with Gloucester and his bastard son, Edmund. So Edmund is such a fabulous character. But Gloucester has another son that we don't meet at all in this first scene.
Right.
But we do get the explanation of what happened with Edmund and how he got to be here. And there's a thing about Shakespeare is that Shakespeare always lets you see from the villain's point of view. And we've discussed there's no villains, but Edmund is the, you know, quote, villain in this one of. There's many villains in this book. But you get to see what the nature of his shame is that converts into rage for him.
And it is always shame-based.
Yeah.
Let me think about Tybalt, right? Like, think about Iago. It's shame.
Absolutely.
It's shame-based.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because shame is the thing. There's been a great book called Violence that was all about the people on death row, these guys on death row, and this guy who wrote it, he used comparisons to Shakespeare plays.
I love that.
It's an incredible book. And he said, you will always see the moment of deep shame that led to that incredible rage that made them fly off the handle and do something so awful.
I feel like in our society, we often equate shame and guilt. The difference is guilt is external. Shame is internal, right?
Yeah.
I'm a bad person versus I did a bad thing.
Right.
If I do a bad thing, I can make amends. But if I'm intrinsically bad and you are good, I'm shamed.
And that kind of shit comes from how people have treated you.
Absolutely.
It's not from, you didn't do anything.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Somebody made you feel that.
Yep.
Because of something they did. And most often on the death row cases, it was child abuse. Horrible. Horrible.
What a fucked up, God, you know, our penal system. Oh, God. Ding, 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 ding. Our penal system! Ugh! It was supposed to be rehabilitation. It isn't about rehabilitation. It's just about punishment. And people who have been traumatized in their childhoods and young adolescence, you know, they need to find a way to face the trauma and understand that trauma lives inside your body until you can actually physically release it. And if you don't actually physically release it, it controls you for the rest of your life.
Yeah. So Edmund, that's why we start with Edmund, because we're going to see his little piece of the story first. And then we'll see this whole big, huge sing-song thing that goes on after that.
All right.
So, Act 1, Scene 1. Just inside Lear's palace, Kent, Gloucester, and Edmund are waiting for the king. Kent, I thought the king had more affected the Duke of Albany than Cornwall.
Gloucester, It did always seem so to us, but now in the division of the kingdom, it appears not which of the dukes he values most, for qualities are so weighed that curiosity in neither can make choice of either's moiety.
Yeah, so a moiety is a share. Their qualities are pretty equal.
Pretty balanced.
And he can't choose, you know, which one he likes best. Affected was cared for, you know.
Right, so Kent's saying, I thought the king liked Albany better than Cornwall. And Gloucester's like, well, I thought so too, but...
Two sentences, pretty much, and you're getting a big chunk of backstory.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. And Albany is actually married to the eldest daughter, so in a way you would have thought, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
They would be the heirs.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But now he's going to complicate matters. So, Kent, is not this your son, my lord?
Gloucester, his breeding, sir, hath been at my charge. I have so often blushed to acknowledge him that now I am brazed to it.
So we have his breeding, which some people are like, oh, that means his education.
I'm no,
like,
oh, wait, that means his, Gloucester saying, I did fuck his mother.
So I guess he's mine. Yeah. His breeding had been at my charge, meaning my expense.
Yeah.
You know, like, I am now branded the father of a bastard. Great.
Right,
well,
and
like,
so,
dude, don't you know how that happens?
Yeah, well, they didn't really.
Yeah,
well, not in King Lear's time, anyway. But also, you know, here's the interesting thing: the ass cushions are gonna hear education hath been at my expense.
Yes,
and the groundlings are gonna hear his.
I fucked his mother.
I fucked his mother,
and now I'm paying the price.
Yeah,
and Kent, I cannot conceive you.
There you go. See,
yeah.
Right? Understand? Mean conceive meaning conceive, understand? Yeah. But that. Right there.
Yeah, there's a joke.
Gloucester. Sir, this young fellow's mother could. See,
so if
joke.
You didn't get the joke, he points it out. Right.
Whereupon she grew round-wombed and had indeed, sir, a son for her cradle ere she had a husband for her bed. Do you smell a fault?
So he's testing him. You see a sin here?
Yeah.
And Kent, I cannot wish the fault undone, the issue of it being so proper.
He's the like, child.
The child is such a nice looking fellow. I don't think it's a bad problem.
These fuckers, right? Gloucester, but I have a son, sir, by order of law, some years elder than this, who yet is no dearer in my account, though this knave came something saucily into the world before he was sent for, yet was his mother fair. And the whore son must be acknowledged. Mm. Do you know this noble gentleman, Edmund?
Whore son.
He calls him a whore son to his face.
And in front of somebody really important.
Yeah. And I have a son by order of law. I have a, you know, I have
a legal
one.
Son.
Yeah. Yeah. I have one. Yeah.
Who's older than this one. So this one's not going to inherit shit.
Right.
And this knave came something saucily, like it was his fault. He came before he was wanted. Jeez, boy. And then to point out the fact that this person speaking to you, Edmund, is a noble gentleman, which you are not. Edmund.
Oh, I'm Edmund?
Yes.
Okay. No, my lord. And Gloucester. My lord of Kent. Remember him hereafter as my honorable friend. Edmund, my services to your lordship.
I must love you and sue to know you better.
Edmund, sir. I shall study deserving.
Yeah, so
I'll Kent find a way
like,
to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll find a
Kent
way to
like,
deserve
I'm
you.
I'm going to strive to know you better. You seem like a nice guy.
Right, and Edmund's like, well, I'll work to make it worth your while.
Yeah.
Gloucester. He hath been out 9 years, and away he shall again. Ah, the king is coming.
Yeah, so he's been away at school for 9 years. He's probably not that old.
Right.
So he was sent away, like, you are a shame to me, and I can't have you around my house. So, how well do he and Edgar know each other? Probably not really at all. All right, da-da-da-da, drink to that.
Oh, yeah, here he comes.
Attend the lords of France and Burgundy, Gloucester.
I shall, my liege.
Meantime, we shall express our darker purpose.
So he sets it up. From the get-go.
Yep, and darker, meaning it's hidden. Please watch through the whole scene, you guys, when he changes his pronoun, okay, from we to our, which is the royal
we,
plural,
right?
Okay?
Yeah.
Because it's really, really important. In fact, you could do a whole paper on Lear's pronouns in this scene.
Ding, 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 yeah. Ding, ding.
Really good paper idea, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
And how he uses them effectively. Give me the map there. Know that we have divided in three our kingdom, and 'tis our fast intent to shake all cares and business from our age, conferring them on younger strengths, while we, unburthened, crawl toward death. Our son of Cornwall, and you are no less loving son of Albany, we have this hour a constant will to publish our daughter's several dowers, that future strife may be prevented now. Sure.
So. Okay. Let's just get this out there to begin with.
Yes.
The girls' dowries, the women, because they're women now, those would have actually already been settled.
Yeah, you would have think.
You would have thinked. When they were married off.
There was a promise of something that comes with them.
Right. That's how dowries work.
Yeah. As royal daughters, it would have been a fuckload of something.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
So it's our fast intent firm, but fast also intimates urgent.
Yes.
Like he needs to get this done, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to crawl toward death.
But also, I'm going to shake off the cares of being king.
I don't need
and
to
confer
deal
them
with all
on
this
my children.
Politics shit anymore, you know? And our son of Cornwall. You guys step in here, okay?
Yeah. Not my daughters. And Queen Elizabeth.
Right.
Right?
Was gone now.
Was gone now.
Now there's a king on the throne.
Now there's a king on the throne. So not my daughters. Yeah. You're not inheriting anything.
And
only
says,
your husband's.
Several dowers, right? Individual. And that future strife may be prevented now. so that y'all don't fight about shit after I'm gone.
Well, as families do. They always do.
They always do. It's terrible.
Even now, so when there's nothing to fight over, they fight.
There's some foreshadowing there. The princes France and Burgundy, great rivals in our youngest daughter's love, long in our court have made their amorous sojourn, and here are to be answered. So here, right now, I'm going to give them their answer, who gets to marry my youngest.
Right.
Okay.
The prince.
He's been putting it off, so they've been there a long time. Why is he putting it off? He doesn't want her to leave.
No, he loves her and he doesn't want her to grow up and be a married woman.
And she's going to move fucking far away to France or to Burgundy. That's fucking across the ocean. I'm 80 years old. I can't go see you. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's both things.
Yeah. So he's selfishly keeping her here, not allowing her to get married, you know? Tell me, my daughters, since now we will divest us both of rule, interest of territory, cares of state, which of you, shall we say, doth love us most, that we our largest bounty may extend where nature doth with merit challenge? So, divest, I love this word. That means to take off clothing,
right?
Actually. But he means, you know, to give away, right?
Yep.
Give away stuff.
But, I mean, how fucked up is this? Tell me, you guys, who
loves me the most.
Who loves me the most? And I'll give you something based on what you say, although he won't give you something based on what you say because he's already decided. He just expects you to all fawn in front of the entire court all over him and try and outdo one another.
Yeah.
And he's completely convinced
and
that
you don't
his...
even need to be a king to do this.
No!
You see fathers and mothers who
do this shit all the
right?
time.
Ugh, it's so
it's
ugly.
Gross. Yeah.
It's gross.
It's really gross.
Gross. Do not let your parents do that. Call them out on that shit.
Yeah, right. You're supposed to love me unconditionally. It doesn't matter.
I don't have to fucking perform for you.
Right. But also, he's making an assumption by doing it in age order that Cordelia is going to top them all.
Yep. It's a big setup.
Yep.
So, Goneril, our eldest born, speak first.
And Goneril, sir, I love you more than words can wield the matter. Dearer than eyesight, space, and liberty, beyond what can be valued, rich, or rare, no less than life, with grace, health, beauty, honor, as much as child e'er loved or father found, a love that makes breath poor and speech unable, beyond all manner of so much I love you.
It's a beautiful speech.
I think, see, here I go defending Goneril from the get-go.
Yeah.
I think she means this in this moment. Okay. I think it's sincere. I do not think, a lot of people play her as if she's pouring smoke, blowing smoke, pouring smoke. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bend over, Dad, I'm going to pour some smoke up your ass. Mm-hmm. Blowing smoke up his ass. I don't think she is. I think she's probably the only daughter who remembers her mother really well. I think she's been raised to be the inheritor. You know, eldest daughter, marry the best man, get the best deal. And the kingdom isn't being, it's not being split into three. In her rearing, that was not a question. So she was going to marry the best guy and they were going to get the whole thing. So
this is a shock to her.
And we haven't even gotten there yet. Yeah. But it's a shock. But she really believes in her father that he's going to do the right thing. And so she's going to say how she really feels, and she's going to get the kingdom. I believe that.
And characters don't lie like this unless we already know a motivation for that. This is the first we hear from her.
Right.
So we have no reason to think that she's lying.
Right. And I don't think she is.
So she says she loves him. More than words can wield the matter, more than I can express, right? Yep. So notice what she uses first.
Eyesight!
Ding, ding, theme. Space is freedom of movement, which women don't have.
Right.
Which is really interesting. As much as child I loved her father found, as or father received, right? Mm-hmm. As much, right? My breath is poor, which is feeble. My speech is unable, inadequate to tell you how much I love you.
How
I care for you.
Yeah.
And Cordelia.
What shall Cordelia speak? Love and be silent. So here's the thing, right? Cordelia doesn't feel in this moment that she has these kinds of poetic words. She just knows that she loves him with all her heart. And so she's like, well, that'll be enough.
Yeah.
It'll be okay.
Right. And now, if you've heard us in other places, this is written in as an aside.
I think she's not saying it aside.
Yeah. Who might she be speaking to?
Anybody! The Prince of France! The Prince of...
No, they're not there yet.
Oh, okay.
But Kent?
Kent.
She absolutely could be speaking to Kent, right?
Or she could be speaking to the audience.
Yeah. But it does not have to be an aside. So, Lear, to Goneril. Of all these bounds, even from this line to this... With shadowy forests and with champagnes riched, with plenteous rivers and wide-skirted meads.
Yay!
Two different ones we have here. We make thee, lady, to thine and Albany's issues, be this perpetual. Which is funny because they don't have any children yet, so issues are children.
Yes, right.
They don't have any children yet.
But also, okay, so in this moment... When he's pointing at the map from this point on the map to this point of the map, all of this will be yours. Now, she's expected her whole life to have the whole thing. She's been reared to it. She's been trained for it. She's been married off to someone she doesn't know, doesn't love.
It was her duty.
It was her duty. She has done everything that's been asked of her.
Yeah. There's no reason to think that prior to this moment... She's been a bitch.
And so when he says this, you'll get this point to this point. She's fucking floored.
Yeah.
Floored. As is Albany, by the way, because I believe he also thinks he's getting the whole kit and caboodle.
Right. But the men are silent in this scene.
I know.
Which is really interesting.
I know, but it gives the actor a lot of fun things to play to work with. Yeah.
What says our second daughter, our dearest Regan, wife of Cornwall? Regan. I am made of that self-metal as my sister, and prize me at her worth. In my true heart, I find she names my very deed of love. Only she comes too short. I profess myself an enemy to all other joys, and find I am alone felicitate in your dear highness' love.
And Cordelia, then poor Cordelia... And yet not so, since I am sure my love's more ponderous than my tongue.
So Regan,
I think
she's a different story.
Yeah, I think Regan, middle child.
Oh, yeah.
right?
Big
middle child energy in Regan. I think she has always, because Goneril
been
was
squashed either by the older one
or the younger one, right? So, yeah. So I think she is invisible to her father, yeah. And she is determined to not be invisible at all costs.
Yeah. And notice right in their first sentence, prize me at her worth, value me the same as her, and reward me equally.
Yep.
Because this is an opportunity for her. She never thought she was going to be inheriting
Buckus. Gornished.
To that. Yeah. We both said the same thing. Yeah. Because I love only she. Comes too short.
Right.
She's not good enough. Don't want any other joy in the world except for your love.
Yeah, right.
Your love. Oh, poor Cordelia. And so ponderous when she says, is more heavy, more serious. My kind of love is more serious than this. This seems very frivolous and very silly.
Untrue, right? Untrue. And at ponderous, yeah. I just think of breasts.
Yeah.
Big.
Pendant.
Yeah.
Pendant.
Yeah.
Weird. To thee and thine hereditary ever remain this ample third of our fair kingdom. So he's already divided in three. No less in space, validity, and pleasure than that conferred on Goneril. So he's reassuring her. I'm giving you the same.
Right. You're getting the same thing as your sister.
Don't you worry. Now our joy. Although our last and least... to whose young love the vines of France and milk of Burgundy strive to be interest, what can you say to draw a third more opulent than your sister's speak?
Okay, so I'm just going to say this, right?
Yeah.
He's already given Goneril this piece and Regan this piece. So there's a piece left. It's
more opulent.
And it's more opulent. It's already a done deal.
It contains the capital of the country. You know?
Good. Okay, and Cordelia.
And he's pretty fucking sure she's gonna lay it on, right?
So he says, speak. And Cordelia says, nothing, my lord.
Great. And I just actually wanted to say, so the vines of the vineyards of France, but there's also the sense of grafting stock on stock. You
yeah.
know, like, putting two plants together and making something stronger, right?
Yep.
There was always this England-France thing all throughout the history plays that we are dealing with. Yeah, when we get to those one day. So, nothing, my lord. Nothing?
Nothing.
Nothing will come of nothing. Speak again.
Unhappy that I am, I cannot heave my heart into my mouth. I love your majesty according to my bond, nor more nor less.
Good. My bond is my duty. My duty of a daughter to a father.
Right.
And you know that that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Right, especially in a royal family.
Yeah. Oh, how, Cordelia. Mend your speech a little, lest it mar your fortunes.
Good, my lord. You have begot me, bred me, loved me. I return those duties back as are right fit. Obey you, love you, and most honor you. Why have my sister's husbands, if they say they love you all? Happily, when I shall wed, that lord whose hand must take my plight shall carry half my love with him, half my care and duty. Sure, I shall never marry like my sisters to love my father all. So she's saying, they're saying they love you more than anything, but what about their husbands and
who are standing right in this room.
Right. And I'm hoping that when I get married, I'll love my husband.
At least half.
Right. Like, I love him and I'll love you. And I can't love him at the expense of you. And I can't love you at the expense of him.
Yeah.
I have love in me that can go around.
Yeah. That's enough. But goes thy heart with this?
Aye, good, my lord.
So young and so untender?
So young, my lord, and true.
So you can really hear the hurt there?
It's yeah.
It's really hurt, right?
Yeah.
So that's human. That's very human.
Right. You're supposed to say you love me more than anything
everybody.
In the world.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I love you more than everybody.
So then he flies off the handle here. So this is maybe where we saw a bit of that dementia thing happening, right? Let it be so, thy truth then be thy dower. For by the sacred radiance of the sun, the mysteries of Hecate and the night, by all the operations of the orbs from whom we do exist and cease to be, here I disclaim all my paternal care, propinquity, and property of blood, and as a stranger to my heart and me, hold thee from this forever.
He's spitting.
He's spitting. Yeah, propinquity is kinship. So we are not kin anymore. I am not your father anymore. Boy, just like that. Boom.
On a dime.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, really, that's an impulse control issue, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then he goes into some crazy imagery here. The barbarous Scythian, or he that makes his generation messes to gorge his appetite, shall to my bosom be as well neighbored, pitied, and relieved as thou, my sometime daughter.
Woo!
Ouch.
You are no longer my daughter.
Yeah. And even these horrible things. So the Scythians were a whole population that it was wiped out, and they had no written language, so there's really no records of them, but there was rumors that they ate their children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's saying, even those people will be closer to my heart than you, my used-to-be daughter. Yeah.
Yikes.
And Kent steps in with an important word. Good my liege, he said. So the difference, my liege, is you can only say that to one person. That's the person that you have committed your allegiance to.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people are called my lord.
She calls him lord, but she did call him liege also. Okay. I thought she called him liege also, but I guess not.
No. I don't think it's from children too. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So Kent steps in with good my liege. Peace, Kent! So I think that this might be a plus two line if they shared all three of these, okay? As thou, my sometime daughter, good my liege, shut up!
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Peace, Kent.
It happens
Stop
fast.
It.
Fast, fast, fast.
Yeah, because then his next line is very regular. Come not between the dragon and his wrath. So he's the dragon, right? Don't stand between me and the person that I'm angry at.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's very regular. So peace, Kent, I think has to be part of that other line.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Shut up! Yeah. I loved her most and thought to set my rest on her kind nursery. Hence, and avoid my sight. So be my grave, my peace, as here I give her father's heart from her. Call France, who stirs? Call Burgundy. Cornwall and Albany, with my two daughters' dowers, digest this third. Let pride, what she calls plainness, marry her. I do invest you jointly with my power, preeminence, and all the large effects that troop with majesty. Yeah.
Whew. More so, peace. Pride. Peace, plainless.
Peace, yeah.
But also,
loved her most, he says. So.
I loved I loved her most. But also, I mean, he's going to tell Burgundy and France, now she's got nothing. What are you going to do about that? But also, Cornwall and Albany, you'll now split this most this prosperous.
Piece,
so who gets the capital?
Right. Good luck with that, because he says, digest this third. You guys decide.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha.
Funny,
right?
You know, I do invest you with my power.
Mm-hmm. Line ending.
Right?
Really important. And then all the effects that troop with majesty. It's quite literal. All of the, if you ever thought about like what it takes to move a royal household, Jesus Christ, it's like hundreds of servants and soldiers and all the people who carry all that shit.
Yeah.
Troop with majesty. There's an entire army.
But here's the thing, right? I do invest you jointly with my power. Preeminence and all the large effects, but
yeah.
But like he's neither of them can be king.
No,
they can't be
so
king.
How's that gonna work?
How's that gonna work? Who's ruling? Who's making decisions?
Yeah.
Who's deciding to go to war or not go to war? Who is making concessions? Who's doing what? Nothing. He's just furious.
And Lear says, "I thought to set my rest on her kind nursery. I would have bet everything that I would have been able to." End my days with her, and she would have been in control of the country.
Yep, exactly. Whoever she married, right? I think he's preferring France at this point over Burgundy. That's my own.
That would be my, yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, right? My own take on that.
Yeah.
But yes, thinking that she would rule.
And then here he sets out his conditions, okay? Ourself, by monthly course... That's interesting. Monthly courses.
Monthly courses, your
period.
Yeah.
Yeah. ourself by monthly course with reservation of 100 nights by you to be sustained, shall our abode make with you by due turn. Only we shall retain the name and all the addition to a king. The sway, revenue, execution of the rest, beloved sons, be yours, which to confirm this coronet part between you. So he's like, here, take
my crown,
and
split it between
it
you guys.
Break it
but this is so interesting, right? So you know, every month I'll move my household to one or the other of you, and I'll live with you with my 100 knights,
and you have to provide for me,
right? I'm gonna keep
my
name.
King Lear.
King Lear, but I'm not going to do any of the work.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So the sway, that means the sovereign authority. The revenue, that's the taxation. You guys are going to take care of all that shit.
Right. All the stuff I don't like doing.
Yep.
You're going to do that.
I want to do it.
And yeah. Beloved sons, here's my crown. Split it between you. Leave me alone.
And so here's a great place where he changes pronouns, right? As here, I gave her father's heart from her, and then ourself bi-monthly course. So he's taking his dignity back to him, and he says he's going to keep it. That's not going to happen.
Right.
So this cornet part between you, Kent. Royal Lear. Notice the double L's. He really separates that word out. It's almost like he's kneeling, like he's got to like make an emphasis here.
He's trying hard to get the king's attention.
Yeah. Whom I have ever honored as my king, loved as my father, as my master followed. The bow is bent and drawn. Make from the shaft.
That's Lear. Lear talking to...
So he's like, get out of the way of the arrow. I have this drawn bow, and I'm going to shoot somebody. And Kent, let it fall, rather, though the fork invade the region of my heart. Be Kent unmannerly when Lear is mad. What wilt thou do, old man?
Ooh!
He just called him old man in front of the whole court.
And Kent can't do that. The fool could do that. Yeah. But Kent can't do that.
But he says, be Kent unmannerly. My bluntness is justified by your insanity
right
now.
When Lear is crazy.
Yeah, I have to say something.
Yeah.
Yeah. What wilt thou do, old man? Think'st thou that duty shall have dread to speak when power to flattery bows? To plainness honors bound when majesty falls to folly. Reserve thy state, and in thy best consideration check this hideous rashness. Answer my life, my judgment. Thy youngest daughter does not love thee least, nor are those empty-hearted whose low sounds reverb no hollowness.
So he's like, don't split up your kingdom.
Yeah.
Don't do it. This is
so
ruinous.
Crazy. Reserve thy state means retain your royal status. Do not fucking give it away. And then check this. Check. Restrain. Restrain your crazy rashness. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then answer my life, my judgment. I will stake my life on this opinion that your youngest daughter doesn't love you least.
Right.
That's just crazy.
Right.
That was not true 5 minutes ago, and it's not true now.
Right.
Just because, so this last, Norado's empty-hearted, just because she doesn't speak a lot doesn't mean that she's empty-hearted.
Right.
King Lear. Kent, on thy life, no more. Kent. My life I never held but as a pawn to wage against thine enemies. Ne'er feared to lose it, thy safety being motive.
I was more concerned with your safety than my own. Yeah. I would lay down my life for you, but I have to say this to you.
Yeah.
This is ruinous.
And Lear, here's an eyesight thing. Out of my sight! Kent. See better, Lear, and let me still remain the true blank of thine eye. The blank is the center of an archery target. So he's like, I will be the one that takes on all of this for you.
Right. And all of this sight, see, eye.
Yeah. Lear. Now by Apollo, king, thou swear'st thy gods in vain. O vassal miscreant!
Okay, so wait a second. So that's King Lear. Now by Apollo.
Yeah. Who is the sun god.
Right.
And he's the god of clarity and seeing clearly.
And this is a shared line. Kent says, now by Apollo, king.
Yeah.
Thou swearest thy gods in vain.
You are bringing up the wrong god for this occasion because you are not seeing clearly.
Right.
Right?
Again, with sight.
So that's
seeing.
Embedded seeing.
Yeah.
Thing. And then vassal is servant.
Yes.
He's reminding him, you're my fucking servant. And then miscreant, misbeliever. You don't believe in me anymore.
Yeah.
So it's all about him and his taking these things very personally, which kings should not do.
But there's something going on with him. Mm-hmm. There just is.
Kings have to be able to separate the politics from the heart, from the man.
Right. And Albany and Cornwall dive in to separate them.
Dear sir, forbear. So Lear must have really threatened physical harm to Kent. Mm-hmm. Miscreant, he's going to hit him. Or maybe he pulls a knife on him, whatever he does, yeah? Mm-hmm. Because Kent's next word is kill. Kill thy physician and thy fee bestow upon the foul disease. He's actually saying, you're trying to kill the person who's trying to cure you, which is Cordelia, mm-hmm. and give the fee for this to the foul sisters. You know? Mm-hmm. Revoke thy gift, or whilst I can vent clamor from my throat, I'll tell thee thou dost evil.
So as long as I can speak, I'm going to call you out on this, because I have no other choice as your loyal vassal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to tell you that you are doing the wrong thing.
Revoke thy gift. Thy gift being Cordelia's portion you're giving away.
Yep.
Don't do it.
Yep.
And Lear. Hear me, recreant! On thy allegiance, hear me. So really interesting. He puts hear me on the other side. You have to fucking listen now.
Right. I am king. You I will king. Listen.
You listen. Recreant, traitor. On thy allegiance, big thing. Because he started this whole thing by saying my liege. Mm-hmm. Right. So by the vow that you spoke to me, you know, when you tied yourself to me, I command you to listen to me. Since thou hast sought to make us break our vow, notice the us,
our,
yeah, which we durst never yet. I have never broken a vow in my life. Well,
which is kind of bullshit.
And with strained pride to come betwixt our sentence and our power, which nor our nature nor our place can bear, our potency made good, take thy reward. So
you're getting what you deserve now.
Yeah, now you're going to get what you deserve. Because my nature and my place and my status, neither one of those things can take this kind of intervention. I will not
break. Well, it's not appropriate in his mind, right? Yeah. I am king. I am your lord. You do not speak to me like this, period.
I
speak
and people do what I fucking tell them to do.
That's right.
That's it.
Yeah.
So our potency, my power is going to be proved by what I'm going to do right now, right? 5 days we do allot thee for provision, to shield thee from disasters of the world, and on the sixth to turn thy hated back upon our kingdom, if on the next day following thy banished trunk be found in our dominions, the moment is thy death. Away, by Jupiter, this shall not be revoked.
So you have 5 days to get your shit together, and then you, on the sixth day, your back better be facing this kingdom. And if it's not, if I find you, if anyone finds you, you will be dead.
You will be dead. Notice 7 days, like God, right? Mm-hmm. Like God creating you. And then he brings up by Jupiter. Jupiter's the king of the gods.
So he's aligning himself king to king.
Yeah. And Kent backs off now. Fare thee well, king. Sith thus thou wilt appear, freedom lives hence, and banishment is here.
Rhyming couplet.
Mm-hmm. The first of many. The gods to their dear shelter take thee, maid, that justly think'st and hast most rightly said. Rhyming couplet. Maid said.
Right.
And your large speeches may your deeds approve, that good effects may spring from words of love.
Approve, love. That's another rhyming couplet. Yep.
He's speaking to Goneril and Regan. He's like, I hope that what you said actually turns into good deeds. I hope. May your words become true. Thus Kent, O princes, bids you all adieu. He'll shape his old course in a country new.
Rhyming couplet.
Yeah. So he'll have a new path. But course, they often use for corpse.
Corpse.
So I think he's hinting also, I'm going to die far away from the people that I love. Mm-hmm. Which is really sad.
Mm-hmm. Gloucester. Here's France and Burgundy, my noble lord.
Yeah, so Gloucester comes in, has no clue what just happened.
Right, he wasn't here for this, like, right?
Jesus, what's happening? Lear. My lord of Burgundy, we first address towards you, who with this king hath rivaled for our daughter. What in the least will you require in present dower with her, or cease your quest of love?
Most royal majesty, I crave no more than what your highness offered, nor will you tender less.
What you said you'd give me, that's what I want, and you're not going to go back on what you said.
Yeah, because it's not very regal to back out on your offer.
Right.
Lear. Right, noble Burgundy.
That's a shared line.
Yeah, they share it because he's cutting him off. He's like, no, you don't understand.
Yeah.
When she was dear to us, we did hold her so. But now her price is fallen. Sir, there she stands. If aught within that little seeming substance, or all of it with our displeasure pieced, and nothing more may fitly like your grace, she's there and she is yours. So he's like, aught, if anything within that little frame, that little person right there.
Who used to not be little, but is little now.
Is little now, she's not worth it to me. Or you can take all of her. Along with my hatred, with our displeasure pieced, so added in. If you like that, go ahead, take her.
I know no answer.
Will you, with those infirmities she owes, unfriended, new adopted to our hate, dowered with our curse, and strangered with our oath, take her or leave her?
Again, this is all in front of the court. He is...
Shaming her.
Shaming.
Very
She's shaming her very publicly.
Yeah.
Yep.
With those infirmities she owes, with her character flaws, this is all you have, okay? She has no friends. She is now hated of me. And her dowry is my curse. And she's made a stranger from me by my oath.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want? And Burgundy's very confused, right?
Pardon me, royal sir. Election makes not up in such conditions.
I can't choose when you say it like that.
Say it like that. Then leave her, sir. For by the power that made me, I tell you all her wealth. For you, great king, I would not from your love make such a stray to match you where I hate. Therefore beseech you to avert your liking a more worthier way than on a wretch whom nature is ashamed almost to acknowledge hers. Yeah, so nature... is his, but also Mother Nature. He's making the equation between him and Mother Nature. Mother Nature's ashamed of her. I'm ashamed of her, right? And he's like, King of France, you don't want her because then we would not be friends.
This is why I think he always intended France to be her.
You and I are buddies and you don't want her.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the King of France turns out to be a lovely person.
Yes, he do.
Yeah.
Am I the King of France? Yes. Oh, I'm the King of France, too. Please. Okay, here we go. This is most strange, that she whom even but now was your best object, the argument of your praise, should in this trice of time commit a thing so monstrous to dismantle so many folds of favor. Sure, her offense must be of such unnatural degree that monsters it, or your forevouched affection, fall into taint.
Taint.
You
love that word.
I do. Taint.
Gotta stop at taint.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So what the hell has happened? What you loved her best.
A moment ago.
And this very fast that she must have done something really horrible, monstrous in order for you to...
In this trice of time, little amount of time.
Right? Yeah.
And then we have these wonderful, images of unclothing. So we had divest before. Now we have dismantle. A mantle is a wrap.
Yes.
Right?
So strip off.
Taking off, stripping off layers. So many folds of favor, right? It's like a robe or a, scarf or something, right? And then unnatural. So he hints, like, did you just discover she's a bastard?
Right? Yeah.
Like, what happened?
Taint. Which... to believe of her must be a faith that reason without miracle should never plant in me. I don't understand what's going on. I could never believe this.
Yeah.
Unless something supernatural happened, right?
Like a supernatural shift happened. I never would believe it.
Cordelia, I yet beseech your majesty, if for I want that glib and oily art to speak and purpose not, since what I will intend...
I'll do it before I speak, that you make known. It is no vicious blot, murder, or foulness, no unchaste action or dishonored step that hath deprived me of your grace and favor, but even for want of that for which I am richer, a still soliciting eye, ding, 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 and such a tongue that I am glad I have not, though not to have it hath lost me in your liking.
Very complex.
Yeah. I don't.
For want of, because right. I lack
the ability.
It's glib and oily. Ooh, that's because how she's describing her sister's
speech.
To speak and purpose not, to make speeches of stuff that I don't intend to do.
Yeah, right.
That's not who I am.
And I think people believe Cordelia in this moment. That she thinks both the sisters are glib and oily, but I'm not sure.
That may be her experience.
I feel like there's a turning... Well, they don't treat her very nicely.
No.
They don't. But I feel like there's a turning point for Goneril. And I feel like you see it happen on stage.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened yet. The seed has been sown.
Yeah.
But it hasn't happened yet. We'll see it when it does.
In the scenes that unfold soon.
Yeah.
But it is no vicious blot. Foul stain, right? So bastardy, again.
Right, I didn't...
Please, can you explain that it's right. not that?
I'm not a bastard. I haven't fucked anybody. I haven't murdered anybody.
Yeah, dishonored step. That step means action. Mm-hmm. I haven't done anything horrible. But what it is that I lack a still soliciting eye. An eye that continually begs for favors. These people that come after politicians and kings, right? Who are always begging, begging, wanting, wanting,
yep.
wanting. That's not me.
Right.
That's not who I am. And you want me to be that.
And I can't be.
And I can't. And so now you're defaming me in front of all these people, especially potential suitors. If she doesn't get married here, what the fuck happens to her?
She has to go to a convent.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only choice she has.
That's the only choice.
Also, shared line. But there was a shared line. Wasn't there a shared...
Cordelia and Lear shared a bunch of lines in this scene. Hath lost me in your liking, and he cuts her off, right? Better thou hadst not been born than not to have pleased me better.
King of France, is it but this? A tardiness in nature which often leaves the history unspoke that it intends to do? My lord of Burgundy, what say you to the lady? Love's not love when it is mingled with regards that stand aloof from the entire point. Will you have her? She is herself a dowry.
Isn't that beautiful?
That is beautiful.
So beautiful.
Just by herself, just existing, she is enough.
She's everything. She's enough. Love is not love, and he's making a good judgment here on Burgundy. Like, love is not about financial considerations.
Although in royal families it often is.
It often was, but he says it doesn't have to be, right?
Right. And he's almost like, wait, that's what she did? She didn't tell you what you wanted
to hear?
What the hell is going on here?
The whole thing. And Burgundy. Royal king, give but that portion which yourself proposed, and here I take Cordelia by the hand, Duchess of Burgundy. Nothing. I have sworn. I am firm. So he throws Cordelia's word back in her face. Right?
Nothing.
I am sorry, then, that you have so lost a father that you must lose a husband.
Peace be with Burgundy. Since that respect of fortune are his love, I shall not be his wife.
Yeah, since financial consideration was your only...
Yeah, you never loved me.
...horse in the game, then forget it.
Yeah, I don't want you.
And then King of France with a beautiful speech.
Fairest Cordelia, thou art most rich being poor, most choice forsaken, and most loved despised. Thee and thy virtues here I seize upon, be it lawful I take up what's cast away. Gods, gods, 'tis strange that from their cult's neglect my love should kindle to inflamed respect. Neglect, respect.
Yeah, nice, right?
Yeah.
And kindle to inflamed. It's almost like he's more
in love with her, right?
In love with her because she is downtrodden now. Like, it's almost like he has a saving comp. He wants to save her.
He's the knight in shining armor, right? Yeah. Thy dowerless daughter, king, thrown to my chance, is queen of us,
of ours and our fair France.
Okay, talk about pronouns, guys.
Yeah, he's
said,
pulling rank.
Thrown to my chance, and then he puts in us because he's like reminding you, you ain't the only king in the room.
Exactly.
Leader.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pulling rank.
Yeah.
Not all the dukes of waterish Burgundy can buy this unprized precious maid of me. Bid them farewell, Cordelia, though unkind. Thou losest here a better ware to find.
Nice. He's like, bring it, Burgundy, you
yeah.
fucking...
Fuck you, you watery...
Milk toast.
Yeah. Watery.
Yeah.
Watery tot.
Great.
Watery tot.
Yeah. It's like water that moves quickly by,
yeah.
right? It's inconstant.
Yeah. So nobody is going to win her from me because she's precious to me. Cordelia, say goodbye. They've been unkind to you, but what you're losing here,
France
you're about to find something much better.
Yep. Yeah. And I love this beautiful, right next to each other, antithesis, unprized precious.
Yes.
Right? Not valued, but precious.
Yes.
Yeah. So beautiful. And he has four rhyming couplets. He's like, Basham! Yeah! That's it! Drop the mic! Fuck yeah! Boom!
Because he really does love her.
So great. And he can save a situation that's really shitty right now.
Yeah.
Right? And Lear's like, fine. Thou hast her, friends. Let her be thine. For we have no such daughter, nor shall ever see that face of hers again. Therefore be gone. Without our grace, our love, our benison. Come, noble Burgundy. So he has two rhyming couplets, but they're shitty ones, right? For we, he's leaving that out there, shall ever see, shall be gone, benison. Yeah, and it's like, Lear, you didn't. No.
You
France
don't compare.
Owns you, man.
Yeah, right. King of France, bid farewell to your sisters. And Cordelia, the jewels of our father, with washed eyes, Cordelia leaves you. I know you, what you are. And like a sister, am most loath to call your faults as they are named. Love well our father. To your professed bosoms I commit him. But yet, alas, stood I within his grace, I would prefer him to a better place. So farewell to you both.
With washed eyes.
I'm
eyes,
crying.
Eyes, I'm
yeah.
crying, tearful. I'm going, but I know in her heart she knows what they are and that they have not been kind. So, but your professed bosoms, you said you loved him. Please
take care of him.
Please take care of him. And I wish I could take him with me, but he won't go. So, and Regan's like, fuck off.
Yeah, don't tell me what to do, bitch. Yeah.
Prescribe not us our duties.
And Goneril, let your study be to content your lord, who hath received you at fortune's alms. You have obedience scanted, and well are worth the want that you have wanted. Now, so this, I feel like, is Goneril. She's telling you, you gotta make him happy
because
you have nothing. But you were not obedient.
Yeah.
You did the thing opposite of what you were asked to do.
Yeah. And you well are worth the want. You got what you deserve.
So I feel like she, as the oldest daughter, was forced to do lots and lots of things that the other two were not forced to do.
Yeah.
The expectations of her were higher. She was held to a certain standard that the other two weren't. And right here she tells you, you have obedience scanted. She doesn't say, don't tell me what to do. And she doesn't say, you're stupid. She says, you fucked up. You
yeah.
didn't do what you were,
and
you didn't do your duty.
Exactly what your behavior warranted you.
Right. So
yeah.
I still, even though Cordelia says they're both glib and oily, I really believe that Goneril still hasn't flipped quite yet. She's at that moment, she's like, I have been so fucked over. I was obedient. You were disobedient. You got what you deserved. But and she's still trying to process
yeah.
that she's been fucked.
Yeah.
Royally fucked.
And her middle sister, obnoxious middle sister, now has half the kingdom.
Right.
And she's like, what the fuck? When did you deserve that?
Right. Cordelia, yeah. time shall unfold what plighted cunning hides. Who cover faults, at last shame them derides. Well, may you prosper.
Yeah, so those people who conceal their evils will be shamed in the end. plighted. And we had plight earlier, you know, like
my vow to my husband, engaged, right.
But here it's avowed cunning.
Yeah.
Interesting.
King of France, come, my fair Cordelia. Goneril. Sister, it is not little I have to say of what most nearly appertains to us both.
So suddenly they're speaking in prose.
And this is where the flip happens.
She's uncomfortable with this, yeah?
She does not like what's happening.
No.
She doesn't like being told she's bad. She doesn't like what's happened with her father. She has now lost everything she ever thought she would have. I mean, that's why she's speaking prose.
And she also finds she has to ally with Reagan. Which is probably not...
Not in her... That's not what she wants to do. Because Reagan is nutty.
He's a loose cannon.
She is a loose cannon. And then, I think our father will hence tonight.
That's most certain. And with you, next month, with us.
You see how full of changes his age is. The observation we have made of it hath been little. He always loved our sister most. And with what poor judgment he hath now cast her off appears too grossly. So, see?
Yeah, she's trying to figure
out. She's putting it together in her head. Is there something not right with him? He's behaving like I've never seen him behave like this. And she is jealous. He always loved our sister most, even though I did everything he ever asked of me.
And so she can't figure it out. Why did he react like that?
Yeah.
And casting her off too grossly, it's too obvious. It's too strange. There's something else going on.
Right. See, I don't see her as... I think Reagan is nutty. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think she's devious because she's had to be.
Yeah.
In the same way...
She's definitely the not loved one.
Yeah. In the same way Edmund is devious because he has to be. Right? Okay.
Reagan. 'Tis the infirmity of his age. Yet he hath ever but slenderly known himself.
He doesn't even know himself. He never has. Himself. Right. Goneril, the best and soundest of his time hath been but rash. Even when he was
with it,
he was always. He always flew off the handle.
Unpredictable.
Right. Then must we look from his age to receive not alone the imperfections of a long engrafted condition, but therewithal the unruly waywardness that infirm and choleric years bring with them.
So we have to look beyond just the fact that he's old now?
Yeah.
And understand this should start a long time ago. That it's only exacerbated by age and irritability about growing old and infirm. So he's now adding on to this kind of character flaw, the fact that he's now old and getting annoyed with not being able to do things and not feeling well and stuff.
Right.
You know?
But she's still, that's still kind. I mean, she's still kind in speaking about him.
Yeah. Such unconstant starts are we like to have from him as this of Kent's banishment. Unpredictable actions. We might be treated like Kent any minute. We got to be careful.
There is further compliment of leave-taking between France and him. Pray you, let us hit together. If our father carry authority with such disposition as he bears, this last surrender of his will but offend us.
Yeah, so his gifts won't be all they're cracked up to be. This last surrender, giving over.
Yeah,
right?
That's a little foreshadowing there, Goneril.
Yeah. So let us hit together. Let's agree upon a course of action. Let's decide how we're going to handle all this stuff.
Yeah.
And Reagan, we shall further think of it.
We must do something, and in the heat.
Strike while the iron is hot.
We got to do it now.
Now.
Before
he's
things
change his mind about all kinds of
things are going to go south real fast, so we better be. But you know, I think Goneril knows she can't depend on Reagan. Like, we got to make a plan, and I think she's thinking, God, I hope you can manage it because you're just like him. You are just like him.
Right.
You fly off the handle. You was
whacked.
Yeah. Yep.
So the mom must have been more like Goneril, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think. My feeling about Goneril, my feeling, for my Harold Bloom.
Let's drink to Goneril.
Yeah, my feeling about Goneril is that she is one of those people who, she's like Kent in some ways. She's one of those people who she's told what to do and she does it. Like, she doesn't have yet yeah. agency of her own at all. Regan always, I think, has had, and Cordelia certainly has had. But I don't feel like Goneril has. I think Goneril's the kind of sort of milquetoasty person.
Well, she's lived a prescribed life.
Yes. Right? With no wiggle room. She couldn't get away with any of the shit her sisters got away with. And I think she hasn't chafed at that until now.
Hmm. There you go. Some interesting perspectives.
I'm a Goneril fan, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, she lived in her skin for a while. There,
I did. So, I love her. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's it.
Ooh, that was exciting.
Yes, and now I need more water.
You need more water and some food.
We got it.
Shit, we're half an hour late.
Okay.
Okay, we're going off to play Scrabble and have soup.
Yeah.
And we love you guys, and here's King Lear, and we're off we go.
Yay! Yeah. Okay, I'm Erin.
And I'm Diana.
This is Fox Shakespeare.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.